I was in a unique position because my children went to Stoneman Douglas. My daughter was at the school and had left just before the incident took place. You know, I traveled a lot of the state afterwards with a lot of the students that wanted to try and make some difference. I thought it would be good for them to see a familiar face from back home.
So welcome back to the Four Questions Podcast, episode 5, the very first episode of 2019. So happy new year.
Happy new year.
Once again, my name's Logan and I am your producer.
And I am Adam Grossman, a rabbi, as well as, I guess you could call me some type of talent.
Some type of talent?
Some type. Maybe on air, maybe on podcast. would that be of value? We are fortunate enough to have spoken with Michael Udine, who is a former mayor of Parkland, as well currently a Broward County commissioner. And over the last 2.5 to 3 years, he has unfortunately been tasked to lead a community through great tragedy. So with that introduction, we hope that you find some wisdom in this new year, and hopefully this provides a launch pad for many more meaningful conversations in 2019. We are very excited. Our first remote guest, we are welcome Michael Udine, a Broward County commissioner. We're very excited to learn more about your process, talk a little bit about various things about balance and faith and all these good things. I guess the first question is, you're a lawyer, you're director of a bank, and then you decide to become a politician. What is that process, and why do you become a politician?
So I was the elected mayor of the city of Parkland since 2006. So I've been doing that for a while. I got involved kind of to give back to the community back then. So at that point, I was a lawyer and an elected official. I later joined a bank board, so I'm pretty busy. In 2016, I ran for the Broward County Commission. And to give you some context, Broward County, if it was a state, would be the 14th largest state in the union. And we on the county commission set the policy and run the policy of the county. We also manage an airport, a seaport, the court system, roads, traffic lights. We do a lot, and it's very enriching to give back to the community.
So what are you currently passionate about when it comes to personal or professional life?
I'm really passionate about, you know, learning as much as I can. So if an issue comes up, even where I'm at, I want to really learn as much about it as I can. I want to be prepared as I make decisions that affect the community. And I want to be thorough in what I'm doing to make sure that as I'm working through an issue in any aspect, in my law practice, in my politics, in my family, that I'm prepared, thorough, and doing the best that I can do.
So how did that, and I appreciate that, it's a very powerful statement. How has that passion inspired your career, your life, your service in the community?
I'm a big believer in giving back, and that's why I do what I do. And just to take these last 18 months of my life, I got elected to the Broward County Commission. And in that time, there's been an airport tragedy in Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. There's been one of the biggest hurricanes we've had in the last decade. And then obviously we had the Stoneman Douglas tragedy February 14th. So couple that with just general obligations of day-to-day work, and it's made for a powerful, emotional, exciting, and kind of intense year and a half.
So you mentioned Hurricane, Fort Lauderdale Airport, also Stoneman Douglas, and the real sense of tragedy that unfolded in those experiences. How do you personally reconcile the tragedy, the loss of life, and how do you, in a professional context, being a leader, work moving forward from that tragedy?
That's a great question, and I'm was in a unique position because my children went to Stoneman Douglas. My daughter was at the school and had left just before the incident took place. You know, since it's happened, I think it's been a lot of, you know, boiling back to your community, to your friends, to your faith. I was in, you know, I traveled a lot of the state afterwards with a lot of the students that wanted to try and make some difference. We went to Tallahassee. I was by you in Gainesville speaking to some of the students that are from Broward County. I thought it would be good for them to see a familiar face from back home. Because remember, a lot of those kids, they're only a year or two out of high school in Broward, and it became very emotional for them. And I just wanted them to be able to see a familiar face, a positive face. I think locally in the community, you know, I think there's been a lot of seeing the camaraderie of the community coming together. It's been very powerful. I know the Friday night after this happened, there was a unity service at one of the local synagogues. And it was packed, and it was not only Jewish people, it was all the people. It was everyone from the community came, and there's been a lot of events like that. And I think they've been an important part of the healing process.
So in thinking about these tragedies and how they've shaped both your personal and professional life, I'm reminded of the question that a famous rabbi once said is, why do bad things happen to good people? And how do you see that in where you are in your current political and personal life?
You know, that's always an interesting question as to why this type of thing happens. And I think that at the end of the day, we have to prepare for living life to its fullest. We have to try and do the right thing. And then, like I've said before, we also have to be a little lucky, because the randomness of some of this is really the thing that's hard to wrap your hands around it. You know, it was Valentine's Day when this happened, and I'm sure that, and I know for a fact that there were kids that didn't want to go to school that day. They said to their parents, hey, it's Valentine's Day, I'm a senior, and maybe the parents said, no, you should still go to school. And, you know, look what happened. So the randomness is really something that's hard to wrap your hands around. I've seen a big uptick of people, you know, moving towards spirituality after this. I personally have been going when I can on Saturdays to, you know, listen to the sermons of some of the local rabbis in town here. And it's been very poignant, and it's been very meaningful to me to just get that kind of grounding.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So how, in thinking about courage and conviction, how do you bring courage and conviction to challenging situations?
I think that it's important to try and do the right thing. And remembering in local government, which is where I've served in my political career, being as mayor of a local city and now as a county commissioner, I try to do the right thing. And if you believe that what you're doing is correct, it takes away from the detractors. And it's something that, you know, you put your best foot forward, you make a decision, you move forward, and then you analyze how that decision went. And in my mind, as long as you're acting from a position of caring, preparation, and doing the right thing, I think that that serves you well, both in public life and in private life. I mean, everybody's going to have challenges that they face in their careers, in their personal life, whatever it may be. And it's important to try and live by the creed of doing the right thing.
You know, you've been talking a lot about the right thing, and I love that that expression. As you think about the values that you're committed to, those core values that you teach to your children, what are some of those core values that you embody, connect to, and why those specific values?
I think it boils down to one major one: treat others as you want to be treated. And if you analyze that and factor that out, you know, it really, it's the underlying basis for all the rest of the things that you have to live by. You know, if you don't want people to talk about you, don't talk about other people. If you don't want to be physically injured, don't physically injure somebody else. And you can, and you can roll it down the process, but treat others as you'd like to be treated. And that goes a long way in making sure that you live a life filled with character.
So as you think about the thing that I think a lot of people agree on, right? It's the golden rule. It doesn't matter what religion you're connected to, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they all have some semblance of the golden rule. Tell me something that's true in your core that almost nobody agrees with you on.
You know, I've made decisions as an elected official or as a leader that have been second-guessed and people didn't agree on them. But that's just the way it is. I mean, you're not going to be able to make everybody happy in life. And if you try to make everybody happy in life, that's a easy way to make nobody happy. You know, you have to push forward on something that you believe in, and you have to, you know, make it work while respecting the other person's beliefs too. It doesn't have to be done in a fight. I mean, clearly we know what it's like now on the national debate on different issues. There seems to always be two sides to everything, and both of those sides seem dug in. You know, it's hard to go through life totally dug in if you can't ever change your mind or recalibrate. I think that leads to more of a problem. I mean, businesses do it all the time. So if you're in a business and the situation and the facts change, you have to change with them.
Very true.
Yeah. And in thinking about that, I know you brought up a little bit about spirituality previously and a little bit about religiosity and how certain things have kind of connected you maybe more deeply. How does religion and or spirituality play a role in your life today?
Listen, I'm not observant. It just doesn't fit within my lifestyle, but I try to, when I can, visit with the rabbis in Parkland. I have my own rabbi and I have a couple of the Chabad rabbis that I visit with. I like to discuss current events with them as it relates to some of the biblical teachings. I'm interested in that. I actually use some of those as I move forward. If I'm speaking at an event, sometimes I'll use some of those concepts that I pick up from my religious leaders. I also like seeing other religious people and other people of spirituality practicing their spirituality. I like it when I walk into a church and that church is packed to the brim. I like it when I drive on a Saturday and I see people walking to synagogue. It just, there's something about it, even though I don't do it, there's something about it that just makes me feel good. And it just makes me know that other people are connecting to their roots and their balance and trying to live a balanced life.
Yeah, it's so beautiful you say that. It's this connection, regardless of whether it's religion and in our personal and professional lives. It's about commitment. What do we commit to? And I think that's really what this podcast is about focusing on our personal commitments and understanding we all have challenges of religiosity, but we all have strengths in it, whether that's in our career path, whether that's in our faith path. So I think that leads us to the big four. So the first one, what does living a balanced life mean to you, and how do you personally accomplish it?
I think you have to make time for your family, your friends, your profession, and for yourself. Those are the four legs of the stools. I think you always try to have to keep them in balance. I don't always do a good job of that. Sometimes I'm accused of spending too much time on one side of those chairs, and maybe you're spending too much time at work and not enough time with your family or with yourself. But if you find a little time for each, I think that makes you a more well-rounded and a better person.
So in thinking about finding balance, and you talk about the four legs to the stool.
Great analogy, by the way.
Yeah, unbelievable. Now, our stool, maybe it's a table with 11 legs. So in thinking about the 11 components, and I think it was sent to you in that email, thinking about those 11 components of faith, work, family, kinetic, which one most resonates with you and why?
I can pretty much do it. I think it's all about family. I think family is the key. I think it's, you know, it's like the old Jewish type saying, but I'm sure everyone has it. You're only as happy as your most unhappy child or family member.
Or your wife.
Or your wife. So I think family is the key to me.
Or I should probably say partner. I apologize. I should say partner.
Family is the key to me. I think that that's the most important. If you have balance at home, I think the rest can fall into place. And I'm lucky that I feel like I have that balance at home. I have a great wife, three great Gator kids. They're all three Gators. And it's nice when you have that level of balance with your home life. It really lets you do more for the community and for other parts of the 11-legged stool when you have that kind of family balance.
So how do you best embody that component of family in your life?
Now that the kids are a little bit older, you know, the five of us, my wife and my three kids, we're like five best friends. We do a lot of stuff together. We love going out to dinner together when we're around. We love going up to Gainesville to visit with them. We talk all the time, and it's important that we're actively involved in each other's lives. We feel the highs when one of us has a high, and I think we all feel the lows when one of us has a low, and we try to work together to try and, you know, make the best of those situations.
So thinking about everything that you've shared, what is one piece of advice that you would offer to those seeking to find greater balance in their lives?
I think that it's like everything else. You got to work at balance, and you got to make sure that you don't let one thing overwhelm and take over the other parts of your life. I mean, you know, I've seen little like memes on Twitter or whatever. It's not that hard. Spend time with your family, eat right, don't drink too much, work out a little bit, and the rest, you know, it's a job to try and do it, but you got to make sure that you do that job so that you have some balance in life.
So I'll ask only two more. These are not part of the big four, but we're very curious. What are up to five? You can give us one, you can give us five must read books that have had the most impact on your life.
I read a lot of books, so it's hard for me to narrow it down to a specific one. I read a lot of leadership books. I like to, you know, to read different levels of leadership, different levels of self type of help and self promotion. I love to network, so I love to read networking books. I love to, you know, meet with people. I like business books, and there are just so many of them that I like to immerse myself in along the way. As for specific titles, there's a lot. I wouldn't really want to narrow it down, but I think it's important to read a little bit every day, especially nowadays with the social media, because that can get all consuming. I think it's important to read at least a few pages of something every day.
I couldn't agree more. Do you happen to have is there a title that you're reading right now that speaks to you, or one that you've recently read that you'd be willing to share?
I did buy the book that was just written about the gun violence at Stoneman Douglas that some of the students wrote. I wanted to read that. I saw that in the airport. I picked that up as one to just take a look at because I wanted to read from their perspective and see how they were feeling about this. You know, and just other things that I pick up along the way.
Follow-up question. When you read, just because I'm honestly curious, do you prefer to read like a physical book, or do you use a Kindle? Do you use a tablet? What's your reading medium?
I like physical. I like picking up a physical book, a physical newspaper. I like to sit at Starbucks or whatever and read the newspaper, actually, rather than...
That's something you don't see most
reading
days.
I didn't actually think they actually still existed, these things called newspapers.
They do, and I buy them, and I like to read them with my coffee.
That's awesome. One more question for you is, what is one question that you like to ask someone to get to know someone that you wish we would have asked?
When I sit down in someone, I like to ask, you know, what are they trying to do to make their community better? Because, you know, it's not just talking the talk, it's walking the walk. So what specifically are they involved with to make the world a better, or their community a better place than when they found it?
It's a very powerful question, and I will say, what a powerful last 20-25 minutes to discuss your thoughts and balance and tragedy, spirituality. I just want to say thank you very much for taking the time. I know there were technical difficulties, but the beauty is
we got it done.
We were able to figure those out.
In the end, the technical difficulties work out because 90% of the time, it is all about turning it off and then turning it back on again. Am I right, Adam? Literally, as in
thank you so much, like, guys. I really enjoyed it.
We always like to have a part for our listeners in case they want to, you know, get in touch, keep up to date with what you're doing in the community and learn more about you. If you could just tell them where they could go to find out that information, it could be either a social media profile or a specific website. I'd like to share that snippet with the audience.
Okay, so if somebody wants to find me, I'm at Michael Udine on Twitter and Facebook.
And that's Udine, U-D-I-N-E.
Yep, and I'm also www.michaeludine.com. That'll get me to my Broward County website, so they can see me on the county commission, and that'll link them to the right place. But I'm on social media a lot, so if you follow me on at Michael Udine on Twitter or Facebook, you'll get a lot of my updates and see what's going on. I'm very big in that media to get out to my constituents and to my friends.
A lot of the conversation, while Michael was extraordinary, deep and thoughtful, and shared a lot of insight into leading through difficulty and leading through challenges, and we didn't want to focus on the tragedy. What's really important for us in really this episode is focusing, especially as we move to this coming year, is what is an essential piece to have as you go on your own journeys. And it kind of is that we as opposed to me mentality. We're all going to have our own individual goals that we're going to set out to do. But if we don't have a collection of people that we can give support to and receive support from, it's going to be really hard to accomplish our goals, to overcome obstacles and challenges, and really be prepared to meet the coming year.
I agree. I think that relationships and family and love are all key components to living a balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
And because it requires that you be radically honest with both yourself and those around you when you need support, that you have people that you can ask for that support and people who are genuinely going to graciously give their time to you to support you because they know that you would do exactly the same for them.
Yeah, and this is one of the most challenging. And we talked a little bit about different challenges with different aspects of our entities or components of balance, of wholeness. And with relationships, and family can be the intermediate family of our related and blood relations or our friend family, which is just as important, especially as we move in different places around the country and around the globe. But can we ask for support? It's a challenge.
It's not easy. It's not easy to say, I can't do this. I need your help. I need help from somebody.
Mind blown.
No, I mean that. I'm saying that. I say that not as a joke. I say really,
it's so simple, such a simple thing, right? It is, I need your help, but it's so hard to take that and actually move to that, conversation, to open up your mouth and say, I need help, because what we're saying about ourselves is we're incomplete.
What we're saying is that we're not complete in some way, shape, or form. And the overwhelming messages that we receive from society, our friends, the people around us, is that we want to make it look like we have it all figured out.
Yes, it's so true.
We want to look like we have our stuff together, that we know all the answers, even though everybody knows that nobody has all the answers. That's the basis of religion.
Yeah, religion and humanity and just getting up in the morning and being confused and being scared and being knowing that we are unable to have all the answers. And I would argue, and especially within this conversation, is that completeness is not perfection. And I would argue striving for excellence is not striving for perfection. Striving for perfection is the ability to understand we are incomplete and we need others to help complete us, right? Where striving for striving for perfection is the inability to understand within ourselves that we are incomplete and we're striving to something that doesn't exist. And that to me is, I know that was kind of abstract, so I'll simplify it in this. So we might have to cut that, but I'll simplify it just to this, is that what you just talked about, Logan, in this sense of incompleteness that we have, I believe that the completeness a lot of us are striving for of understanding everything or having the answers to everything is actually not wholeness. Being complete and being whole is understanding what you know, what you don't know, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and the ability to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very well said, Adam. One of the best things that I remember from our conversation with Michael was how he took ownership of creating and maintaining that sense of community around the entire state of Florida as a leader during those absolutely horrific times. He talked about coming to Gainesville so that people had a familiar face, right? Graduates of Stoneman Douglas High School who were new students at the University of Florida and around the state of Florida in college, so that they have a familiar face, somebody they recognize. And I bet that that's because he has a great support system himself, so that he can then be a source of support for others. And it's very commendable.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because one of the other things that kind of was touched on beyond this idea of family and relationships and the essential need of that is also lead. Leading isn't just being a face, right? Leading is being compassionate and empathetic and doing exactly what you would do in building your relationships, right? How do you open your ears? How do you listen to the needs and the challenges that exist within people's lives? And through that, help them and help as a community go through these very challenging times. And I think it's whether we're leading many people or we're just having a conversation with another, the same principles are essential, right? Empathy, compassion, honesty, right? And how do we use that to help us be more whole and also allow for others to gain fulfillment because of it?
Yeah, and that's why I'm really glad that this is our first episode of the new year, because I know that there's a lot of New Year's resolutioning happening right around now.
Yeah.
And a lot of those New Year's resolutions could be a million different things. It could be I'm going to get my stuff together. It could be a lot of them are related to fitness and diet and wellness. But I would argue it's also important to consider who are the people that we're surrounding ourselves with, and are we making a conscious effort to keep the people that we want around us, and are we someone who has had a struggle with asking for help, and what are we going to do to change that in the year to come?
Yeah, and it kind of moves from where New Year's resolutions are typically about the me.
100%. Yeah.
And how do we start flipping that script to New Year's resolutions is about creating the we.
Mm-hmm.
And while those letters look very similar, how do we invert that M to a W is really, really a great opportunity in 2019. And I think my hope with this first episode, and I hope each and every one of the listeners that are out there
take this as an opportunity to really focus on that community one is building. They say that to have a great community, you need 5 great friends, right? 1 great friend, 2 great friends. You don't need more than 5, right? Maximum 5. So how do you really find that one person that you know you're going to give the shirt off your back, and you know they'll give the shirt off yours? And how do you offset your own needs with their needs?
And it all starts with accepting the reality that to build that kind of a relationship, you have to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Isn't that the toughest?
I don't say that as somebody who never struggles with it, because it's not easy. It's not simple. It's simple to say, very, very, very hard to do.
Oh, vulnerability is the key. And I think a lot of times we use vulnerability in our intimate relationships, our spouse, partner, mm-hmm. right? Those intimate relationships. But we don't think about it as vulnerability in the sense of the community we're surrounding ourselves with, right? It's not about physical intimacy, right? It's about emotional connection and really platonic relationships that are essential in really accomplishing what we're seeking to accomplish. It's a lot easier to smile and say everything's fine and walk around and high five or the opposite. It's a lot easier to say, oh, my day's bad, right? But really not go into the context of what is positive, what is a challenge, and how together can we overcome it together.
Yeah. So I think that I know for a fact I've learned a lot from our conversation with Michael, and I hope that everyone listening has as well. I think that these concepts of family relationships, being open, being vulnerable, being willing to not only ask for help, but also going out of our way to give help as well, because it's a cycle and it's a two-way street. It's about, like Adam, you said, it's about giving and receiving. In my experience, it's always better to start with the giving, and then those who give, you get back what you give out into the world.
Yeah, it's good we're doing this in January and not December, mm-hmm. Because in December, it's almost like our mindsets switch onto this sense of giving. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the context of the American cultural mindset that right after Thanksgiving and on through the new year, it's give, 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 mm-hmm. give, give. And sometimes we forget that there are 11 other months of the year. And if we take that mentality, regardless of your religious identity, regardless of what holiday one celebrates, those holidays are focused on this idea of giving the gift of light to another being. And if we focus on that gift of light each and every day is Christmas, every day is Hanukkah, every day is Kwanzaa, and you fill in the blank. And I think we'd have a much more dynamic relationships for sure, but most certainly much, much more integrated communities.
Well said, Adam.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm feeling very deep right now.
It's almost as if he's a rabbi and he's done these kind of things before. and it's with that we wish everybody once again a very happy holiday season and a great, great new year, a great 2019. Hope that your relationships become even more fulfilling in this new year. And we want to thank everybody who has supported us in this passion project, creating the Four Questions podcast, and everybody who will continue to support us. We thank you. Thank you so much.